From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
And who is fighting to protect the lives and the livelihoods of our fellow Illinoisans during this deadly global pandemic? Over and over, it's Democrats that deliver for the people of Illinois.
No more tax hikes. No more attacking law enforcement. No more leftist radical agendas. And no more unaccountable king-like rule by one man shutting down our economy and destroying Illinois' future. So what do we say? Let's fire Pritzker!
So whatever you may read in the press, Democrats in Illinois are united. There's too much at stake to be divided.
That's the Illinois Democratic County Chairs Association President Christina Zahorek. Also, we heard from the Illinois Republican Party Chair Don Tracy. He wants to see Governor J.B. Pritzker fired next year in the upcoming governor's race. And Governor Pritzker, of course, talking there as well. It's that time of the year, the Illinois State Fair, politics, they go hand in hand. State Fair is sort of an unofficial kickoff to the next election, and it's also a chance to gauge where the parties stand at this particular time. We'll size up Democrats and Republicans coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also, we have Hannah Meisel. She's NPR Illinois State House Editor. And joining us today, Rachel Hinton, who covers government and politics for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Rachel, it's good to have you on with us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
So the fair has its rallies, photo ops, some good old retail politics. And Hannah, let's start with the Democrats. They hold every statewide office, big majorities in the House and Senate. And despite what we heard there at the start of the show, there still appears to be some tension in the party. Is that correct?
There is some tension. You know, this summer we've seen a lot of that on display in this fight over the energy and climate bill that was delayed at the end of May and then delayed when lawmakers went back to Springfield briefly in the middle of June. And, you know, it's been really interesting to watch what Democrats have done. This is like the first major piece of legislation that it, very complicated that Democrats who control the General Assembly have tried to do without Mike Madigan. You know, Mike Madigan famously, you know, member management and prioritizing the needs of stakeholders. That was what, you know, part of what made him so powerful for so long. And this is, like I said, a really complicated piece of legislation. And you've seen two key constituencies, organized labor and environmental activists, you know, split and dig in their heels. And it's just, it's been really interesting to watch. And then you also have this intra-party fight over the structure of the Democratic Party of Illinois, the party infrastructure that Madigan left behind that he traditionally used mostly to keep his own majority in the Illinois House. A lot of legal questions over whether Congresswoman Robin Kelly, as a sitting member of a federal, you know, elected official, can raise state money or have any sort of involvement with so-called soft money raised for state and local elections as chair of DPI, which she was elected in, I believe, March, over the objections of folks who said, well, hey, there's clearly a lot of legal issues. And so we saw this week the DPI vote to approve a new committee structure that would, they say, you know, remove Robin Kelly from the, you know, touching any of that state money. But still, there are people who, you know, aren't quite sold that that's going to be the way forward. Governor Pritzker, you know, I asked him the other day if he's 100% comfortable putting money into the DPI, and he did not answer. You know, we saw House Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President Don Harmon, by the way, both did not show up to the fair, Harmon because he had a breakthrough COVID case, Welch because he's out of town at a conference, declined to serve on that new committee structure within DPI.
one of the things that also was interesting, well, he showed up to the fair, was at the fair quite a bit this past week as Governor Pritzker, but he did not attend this Democratic County Chair's breakfast, a traditional breakfast that's always held. And there were some different reasons going on there. But Rachel, I thought that was kind of surprising. Your thoughts on that?
I also thought it was surprising. I spoke to the executive director of the County Chairs Association, and he couldn't remember a time when a sitting Democratic governor didn't attend that brunch. It's a large traditional rallying point for the Democrats ahead of Governor's Day, ahead of, you know, rallying later on the director's lawn or, you know, anywhere else really on the fairgrounds. Pritzker's decision to not go, I think, says a lot about the rift within the party. Obviously, you know, in the sound bites we heard ahead of the show, Christina Zahorek, who is the head, the president of the County Chairs Association, says, you know, no matter what the media is telling you, we're not divided. There's too much at stake here. And I think that a lot can be at stake, and also you can have a divisive party. Robin Kelly, Representative Robin Kelly, who now chairs the state Democratic Party, said everybody makes their own choices, you know, when asked about why Pritzker wasn't at the brunch that day. Pritzker said, you know, he decided not to go to the brunch and then made plans with his family, and that is why he didn't attend the brunch. But it seemed a bit weird or questionable for him to make those plans on Governor's Day, the day that is, you know, named for the position he currently holds. And even though he held a, you know, more scaled back rally with just the constitutional officers speaking later on after the brunch on, I think that was Wednesday, it felt weird. It felt like there wasn't a real unified vision for the party, even though obviously their goal, their vision electorally is to make sure that Democrats are elected up and down the ballot. It didn't seem like they wanted to come together physically to hobnob and shake hands and whatnot to really show Republicans and others that they are actually united.
Yeah, aside from those optics, Charlie, you know, I look back and I can't remember a time when there wasn't some division within the Democratic Party. You know, and of course, Republicans have their own divisions as well. At the end of the day, most of these people who view themselves as Democrats that voted for J.B. Pritzker and many of the others on that are going to run for re-election again or be on the ballot are probably going to cast Democratic ballots the next time. I mean, that's so are we overblowing the fact that these people don't seem to get along in some cases?
Well, I would make a couple observations. The first would be, the average citizen probably doesn't really give a darn whether or not the Democrats' interpersonal relationships are fine or not. There's a lot of other things that are in people's minds much more than, well, the governor didn't go to this particular breakfast. And as you mentioned, when push comes to shove, they're all going to be united. They're all going to be pushing to elect Democrats up and down the ticket. And another observation would be, and this is one from having watched this stuff for a long time, if you think there's division within the party now, just think back a decade or so, what it was like when you had Madigan and Blagojevich, backed by Senate President Emil Jones, at each other's throats and had a very hard time getting things done. And in my mind, the antagonism that existed then makes what's going on today like a kindergarten spat or something.
Yeah, Hannah, that's like Charlie said, there the good chance they're all going to work together to get each other elected. But where it does come into play sometimes are issues like you talked about, like, you know, an energy package with some controversial pieces there. When people aren't necessarily getting along and then trying to get them to vote for something that they may not want to vote for, that becomes the problem.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been interesting to watch, like I said, Democrats try to find their way in a post-Madigan world. We have seen Democrats, you know, leaders, especially Chris Welch, who replaced him, you know, free to be as progressive as, you know, they've always wanted to be when push comes to shove over practical policies, and especially this big energy and climate deal, which, you know, to remind listeners, a lot is at stake. We could, Exelon, this nuclear giant that, you know, has six nuclear plants in Illinois, mostly northern Illinois, they're threatening to shut down possibly three plants starting in September. And, you know, this morning before we taped, House and Senate announced that they're going to come back on the 31st. Stated purpose of that special session is redistricting. But, you know, obviously folks who have been negotiating this energy deal hope that, you know, we can get something done before that deadline. And the other deadline is running out of funding, a forced refund date for ratepayers' pot of money that is supposed to fund renewable energy projects. And so if those deadlines are blown, I mean, the hopes of a lot of progressives and, you know, frankly, a lot of labor folks too, you know, are kind of dashed, and we're going to have to start from scratch kind of on Illinois' burgeoning renewable energy industry.
You know, Hannah, you mentioned the nuclear plants. There's a certain irony, at least in my mind, because a year ago, the big point of controversy seemed to be, what sort of subsidy are we going to give Exelon to keep these nuclear plants running? And initially, the Governor Pritzker's administration had an analysis, a study done, and said, well, they need something south of $200 million. And Exelon wanted closer to a billion for the two plants. Well, finally, the governor's people and Exelon came together and kind of split the difference. And so subsidies for Exelon, which will be paid by the ComEd ratepayers, really aren't a question anymore. It has more to do with the future of a couple of coal-fired plants, which the governor wants to phase out as part of his goal to make Illinois carbon dioxide emission free, if you will, because of the change in climate. And the environmentalists are pushing for this. And on the other hand, you have unions who are arguing, if you shut down these plants, these coal plants, we're going to lose a lot of jobs. And we don't want that to happen to our workers. And that's where the sticking point, at least from my perspective, appears to be at the moment.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and the Chicago Sun-Times' Rachel Hinton. And Rachel, let me turn to you. Let's switch gears now. Go to the Republican side. They had their own rally and own day at the state fair. We know there are three candidates who've announced for governor: Gary Rabine, Paul Shimpf, Darren Bailey. There may be more. What did you take away, at least from the Republican day at the state fair?
Sure. So kind of like Democrats, they had two events, the morning event, which was a meeting of the Republican State Central Committee, featured candidates addressing basically the rank and file members of the Republican Party. I thought the real interesting part of that was the reporter interviews that happened after the three gubernatorial candidates addressed the Republican crowd. We had Senator Darren Bailey not saying that President Trump lost the election, only saying President Joe Biden is, you know, currently the president. He also wouldn't say whether or not he's vaccinated. He said, I believe several times, that, you know, asking him about it is a HIPAA violation. It is not. Gary Rabine, a businessman, he kind of expressed similar views to Bailey in terms of vaccinations. He said it's his body, it's his choice. He also he peddled misinformation around the vaccine, saying that thousands of people have died from them. Paul Shimpf said he's vaccinated and also said that people are tired of the vitriol. People are tired of toxic speech. You know, in politics. Later on at the rally, I think, you know, check Hannah's Twitter for the full transcript, but it was the main speaker, the guy who kicked it all off, made some very problematic jokes, both about women, about, I believe he made a Hitler reference. He took a shot at Pritzker and his weight. But generally there, hearing from other members of the Republican Party about their optimism for pushing their message forward and trying to flip some districts that they believe are totally possible. House Republican Leader Jim Durkin said that the failure of the fair tax really gives Republicans a foundation for the next election. I spoke to a couple of other people who, you know, pointed to the failure of the fair tax, but also some precincts, some districts in the last presidential election as areas that are of interest to them, because they think that if they can begin talking to those people and begin talking to disenfranchised or disappointed Democrats, that they can begin to kind of make headway in Cook County and Chicago and other areas, and hopefully begin to, stop being in the minority in both chambers and also pick up a couple of those constitutional offices as well.
Well, it seems to me they've got to have a candidate for governor, at least, who is not only not going to embarrass the party, but also somebody that might be able to attract some moderate votes. Some people think that could be Congressman Rodney Davis from Central Illinois. And Rachel, I know he was there, but I'm guessing he did not make any announcement at this point regarding the fact that he might run.
Yeah, he did not. He said that basically his political future is dependent on whatever the quote unquote corrupt Democrats decide to do with the congressional maps, which have yet to be drawn. The reason for that is he would like to stay in Congress, but if he is remapped into a district with another Republican, or if his district is erased, or depending on what his district looks like after that process, that could force his hand to potentially run for governor. But yesterday he made no announcements. He basically stuck to the same talking points he's been using.
And Hannah, Rachel mentioned there the fact that I guess was sort of an opening monologue. Several jokes were made. That was Paul Palazzolo. He's the Sangamon County Circuit Clerk. Thought that was that got a lot of negative press and even some groans from people in the audience and on the stage there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, it's, I was standing with Republican staffers who I've known for a long time. And, we looked at each other, we looked around and yes, there were people who were clapping at these very off-color offensive jokes. But for the most part, people look pretty darn uncomfortable with, he delivered it like a stand-up comedian would, only every joke pretty much bombed. Jokes from saying that Nancy Pelosi has had so much work done on her face that every time she crosses her legs, her mouth snaps open. And jokes about the governor's weight, saying that JB stands for Just Bacon, and that his main infrastructure spending these days is on belts. Not very funny. Comparing former Republican governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to Hitler, drawing comparison to, Schwarzenegger, I guess, recently weighed in on the, calls about freedom, re-masks and vaccines. And said, I guess he said, screw your freedoms or something like that. And so Paul said, am I the only one who sees a problem with a charismatic politician originally from Austria saying those kinds of things? And then, the comparison is supposed to be to Hitler. It's just, it's not good. It was not good. Everyone knew it. And those who are serious about changing the direction of their party and like actually getting Republican, those who want to move beyond talking points and like actually be in a position to govern again, they don't have patience for that kind of thing. And, they're annoyed that it occurred. But of course, as lots of people point out too, no one got on stage and said, I disavow that kind of humor.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts on that? I mean, we've seen people step over the line, with a live microphone many times. That does happen, in cases. But the Republican Party has run into so many problems. Of course, we remember Mary Miller earlier this year, right after taking office, quoting Hitler, saying Hitler was right on some things. And you know, again, it's something you'd think they'd be watching their P's and Q's when they're out there and the media is watching as well. Any surprise with what took place?
Yeah, I was surprised. I've known Paul for a long time, and I was surprised. I was very disappointed. I thought he was a better person than that. And I think, wasn't it the prospective gubernatorial candidate, Paul Shimpf, who said something about not making personal attacks? And he discussed how when he ran for office, he ran against Sheila Simon, won the Senate seat, and he pointed out that we talked about the issues. We didn't talk about personal stuff. We didn't attack each other. And in my mind, that's the way politics is meant to be. But in this day and age, Republicans seem to have forgotten that, and to a certain extent, Democrats too. And thinking back about it, the one name we haven't mentioned yet, who was there, he said, as an observer, is the RTA chairman, Kirk Dillard, formerly a state senator, formerly on the staff of Jim Edgar and I believe Jim Thompson, someone who's run for governor unsuccessfully in the past. And he represents the kind of Republican that used to be in the predominance in Illinois, someone like a Jim Thompson or a Jim Edgar, as opposed to kind of what we have today. And I'll go out on a limb. It's not really a limb, it's more like a steel eyebar, and say that the three candidates who are now announced as seeking the Republican nomination for governor, that any one of them would get his clock cleaned big time by J.B. Pritzker in the general. And the difficulty for the Republicans appears to be, how do you get past the modern day descendants of the know-nothings of back in the 19th century to get the nomination for someone who can actually win in a state like Illinois?
Yeah, how do you appeal to moderates but also get those downstate votes and some of those people who may traditionally vote Republican, but they're opposed to some of the things like masking and some of the other policies that have been put in place? I do want to save just a couple of minutes here before we wrap up. And Hannah, let me turn to you, because I wanted to find out where we're at with coronavirus. Another week has passed. We're still seeing quite a number of cases. The Delta variant still an issue. Schools getting ready to start or has started in some places. But so far, from a state policy standpoint, as far as, you know, an indoor mask mandate, Chicago has approved that. But we're not hearing that from the governor at this time, right?
No. When we asked, I think Rachel asked the governor the other day, at what point would he re-implement a statewide indoor mask mandate? You know, he declined to say. He said, you know, I am glad that municipalities like Chicago are taking steps to, you know, protect their citizens. But, you know, let me remind listeners that Chicago, of all the 11 EMS regions in the state, has the lowest COVID test positivity rate, whereas, you know, the rest of the state, especially Southern Illinois, the Metro East, and to a certain extent, our region here in Springfield, you know, has definitely climbed to levels where pre-vaccine, the governor would have been clamping down, you know, putting mitigations on us. So we'll see. The governor, though, when Rachel was pressing him, repeatedly said, you know, I'm clearly not shy about putting mitigations on. I have a acquaintance who teaches in a district down the Metro East, Staunton, and I know that that district announced yesterday that they're going to go full remote until the end of the month due to COVID concerns. And certainly not the last district I predict that we will see that happen.
Well, just about a minute left here. And Rachel, just to have you kind of follow up on that, again, you talked to the governor. Anything else you want to add as far as what the governor was saying?
He kind of just stuck to his talking points. I think all over the state, we're seeing COVID case numbers trend upward, and not only trend upward, but also hospitalizations and deaths. We're seeing just an increase in both of those things statewide. But
he hasn't really shared or shed light on what it's going to take for the state, for him to implement the statewide mask mandate.
Okay, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, Illinois has a lot of state symbols, right? We have the state bird, the cardinal, the state flower, the violet, state tree, the white oak. We even have a state snack food, popcorn. There's more than a dozen of them all told. Come January, we'll have another one, the official state microbe. The governor a couple of days ago signed legislation designating Penicillium rubens, the mold that yields the antibiotic penicillin, as the official state microbe of Illinois. And at the bill signing, the governor also paid tribute to Mary Kay Hunt, who's nicknamed as Moldy Mary, the researcher who discovered a mold on a piece of cantaloupe that yielded a strain of this microbe, this fungus, that allowed for speedier production of penicillin due to her efforts and her colleagues at a federal lab in Peoria.
Okay. And Rachel?
We've been waiting for the legislature to come back and take up energy legislation. And today, the Sun-Times, in relation or in collaboration, I should say, with Inside Climate News, did a story about home solar panels and how the demand for those have plunged because the state doesn't have the money, the incentives to really encourage people to get those solar panels. The story also talks about long-term what this could mean for the state's solar industry. So I'll be rereading that and talking to others about it going forward as we wait to see what happens with this energy legislation that, you know, for months legislators have told us is 99% or 95 to 99% negotiated. And if that's the case, you know, where is it and when will legislators return to vote on it? And will it be in time to, you know, potentially stave off some really dramatic effects on the state's solar industry?
Okay. And Hannah?
So last week on the show, we talked about a private Christian school up in Elmhurst that that got its recognition status taken away by the State Board of Education when it refused to comply with the governor's school mask mandate. Now, a week later, so about 30 public schools have been put on probation by ISBE for refusing to comply, and three more private schools also had their recognition taken away by the state, which, to remind listeners, means, you know, losing that recognition status means that you can't have students participate in sports, can't participate in the state's private school scholarship fund, and, you know, most critically, graduating seniors, you know, their diplomas will not be recognized by the state, and, you know, that could have consequences. It's still early in the school year. Obviously, schools might comply. It seems that a lot of, at least the public schools will, and that original school, as we discussed last week, within, I don't know, 12 hours of being told the recognition status was taken away, they said, okay, we'll comply.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton with the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org, through the NPR One app, or iTunes. And don't forget to join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.